All right, welcome everyone to a new episode of the Roscoe's Wetsuit Neuro Podcast. I am your host, Toby Passman. On the show with us today, we have a very special guest, Stephen Martin. Stephen is an award-winning author who enthralls listeners with insights about the true nature of reality, the afterlife, and reincarnation. He's the talk show host of a popular weekly internet podcast, The Truth About Life, which became clear to Stephen that as he interviewed dozens of near-death survivors, psychics, researchers into the paranormal, as well as quantum physicists and medical doctors, that humankind is on the cusp of a transition to a new understanding of the true nature of reality. So Stephen, really excited to have you on the show today.
Hey, I'm excited to be here, Toby. Thank you for having me.
So what originally, like, tell me about kind of your early life experience and how you eventually ended up kind of getting to where you are today.
Yeah, well, it's been quite a journey. I grew up in I would call it a secular household. I mean, we went to church maybe on Easter, probably not even on Christmas, but yeah, my parents were what I would call scientific materialists. They believed in that if you couldn't see it under a microscope, it didn't exist. And that was pretty much what I thought until I was probably in my mid-20s. I was not yet married. I'd graduated college. I was working for an advertising agency in Baltimore, Maryland, and I had a couple of roommates, and I had the flu badly, and I was, unlike my usual Saturday nights, I was at home nursing the flu, reading a book, and some people came into the apartment, and I decided to get up and see what was going on. Actually, there was a party going on, and I partook in the different things that were going on there. You know, I had a little bit to drink and so forth, and I shouldn't have done that. When I went back upstairs, I lay down in the bed and it started spinning. And the next thing I knew, I was looking at peeling paint on the ceiling of my bedroom. And I kind of turned and looked, and I saw my body down on the bed. And I thought, you know, and actually I felt better all of a sudden. You know, it was, you know, everything was calm. I felt okay. And I was looking down at my body and I thought, no, wait a minute. I'm up here looking down there. My brain's inside my head down there. How can I possibly be looking at my body? You know, the consciousness is created by the brain. That's what I thought. And so that kind of opened my eyes to maybe there was more to life and reality than I thought. And that started me on this quest to find out what is the true nature of reality. And I've been at it ever since. You know, I joined the Rosicrucian Society, which is a society of mystics that study metaphysics. And I read everything I could on the subject. And long story short, that was a long time ago. But since then, I've written a number of books about what I've learned. I've talked to so many people and who are experts or studying all these kinds of things and learned a lot from them. So that kind of gives you the background in a nutshell of where I came from and where I am now.
And what were some of the books or just pieces of education that you found?
I think probably the one that really got me, I read it in one sitting, I was so fascinated by it, was Life After Life by Raymond Moody, which came out, I think, probably in the mid-70s, 78 or something like that. And of course, that was, Raymond Moody was actually an intern, medical intern at the University of Virginia hospital there. And he talked to people who had near-death experiences and reported on them in this book. And it was really just fascinating to read because I'd never heard of such a thing. And of course, there'd been a lot said and written about near-death experiences since then, but his was the first. I think it was probably about 40 some years ago, and he's still around talking and doing his thing, but I think it was called Life After Life by Raymond Moody, and he had about 150 people that he talked to who had had near-death experiences. So it was, that really opened my eyes and got me going. And I read, oh, just dozens and dozens of books on that subject. And as I said, I joined the Rosicrucian Society, which has been around, they say, since the Egypt time. But I think there were some founding fathers like Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin were Rosicrucians. And it's, they basically know what's going on. They really do. They've got it figured out. It's a secret society, but really anybody can join it. And they have a course you go through. And I went from an adept, I mean, from a, I guess they call the entry-level people, neophytes or something like that. And I got all the way up to adept where I passed all their exams and so forth. And you know, reincarnation and what is, you know, what is the universe and so on? What is it made out of? It's not made out of material substance, which is what scientific materialists think.
What is it made out of?
I call it consciousness. I think quantum physicists would call it the unified field, but it's mind, it's thought, it's underlying everything. I picture it as consciousness itself. And of course, the Hindus, the Rikis of ancient India, knew that 4,000 years ago. And they called it Veda, which means, I think in Sanskrit, means knowledge. But it's consciousness, and everything arises from that. It's like, as one of the scientists said, his name escapes me right now, the universe is like a giant thought. And that's what it is. It's all one. It's all connected. There's one life, one consciousness of which we're all part. And we have evolved from that. And we think we're separate because we have our own memories and we have our own egos that we've developed over a lifetime. And so we think we're separate, but we're not. We all share the same consciousness. The consciousness that's looking out at you, at me, is the one that's looking out at me, at you. And it's all one, we're all one. And once we all realize that, maybe we'll start treating each other better, you know?
So why do we often experience that division where we don't feel that it is all one and connected? And then I guess a follow-up question to that is, how do we then have these experiences where we can experience that kind of collective consciousness or coming together?
Well, that's a good question. Excellent question. And I would say the main reason we think we're separate and we have that sensation or feeling that we're separate is that we each of us have an ego that has developed over this particular lifetime. And its whole job is to, the ego's job is to survive. And I think it probably evolved as part of our evolution as human beings because, you know, think back when we were like Bushmen or on the African savannah, where we were, it was a pretty tough life. And we had to worry about where the next meal was coming from. We had to worry about our neighbors barging in and taking our stuff. And so we develop these egos that worry about things, you know, what do other people think, but where's our next meal coming from? And it is like a voice in our head that's telling us stuff that really is in this modern society, often not very helpful, but it's there. And so what you need to do, if you want to experience the fact that we are all one and have that sensation, it's not always easy to do, but you start by saying, who am I? And I am. And I am, that I am word is sometimes will take you back to that, what I call the objective observer, the observer that can kind of step out of your body or onto your shoulder and kind of observe you going about your daily business and think about what you're thinking about. I mean, our thoughts are not our own. I mean, we can actually think about our thoughts. We can step back from them and think about, you know, why am I thinking that? Or what, you know, why is my ego telling me to do that? And, you know, that's not going to be helpful. There's a moment between, you know, something happens, someone insults you, for example, and, you know, your reaction is to, you know, strike back. But there's a moment between the time you're insulted and the time you react where you can stop yourself and say, you know, that's not me. I'm not going to do that. And to me, that shows that there's something beyond the ego that is the real you. And that is that objective observer that is part of that unified consciousness that we're all part of. I have had the sensation of oneness, and I've only had it really one time, but it was absolutely magnificent and impactful, where for a few minutes, I felt like any question I had, I could get the answer. You know, I was connected to the infinite mind, if you will, that so that I, you know, the meaning of life, everything was right at my fingertips. And when it happened, I happened to be kind of lying back on an armchair in my backyard, and everything around, the shrubs, the trees, all I could see the aura around them. And I had the sensation that there was what physical reality was the outside of something very vast that's really on the inside of everything. And that didn't last more than about 3 or 4 minutes, but it was enough for me to realize that that is possible. And people do have that experience. It's, I think Joseph Campbell called it a feeling of mystery. And he said that anybody who's had that feeling of mystery knows there's a dimension of the universe that's not available to our senses. So there you go.
Is there a reason that you think we can't access that state more often? Why it's so elusive to have those sort of mystical or transcendent experiences?
Yeah, I think it's the ego. And I think that the ego is always, its job is to fight for survival. It doesn't want to let go. It, you know, it has kept us evolving for many millennia. I think, you know, the first Homo sapiens probably existed a couple hundred thousand years ago. And we managed to survive when a lot of our other cousins, like the Neanderthals and all the other ones that have come to light in the last 20 years or so, died off, you know. So we, you know, we're the end of a long chain of evolution, and we've made it to the top. And I think one of the reasons is we have egos, but now it's time for us to realize the ego isn't always our friend. Now, I mean, it's not like we're, maybe if we still lived in the bush in Africa, it would be helpful, but in modern 21st century society, it can get us into a lot of trouble.
So Stephen, one topic I wanted to ask you about, I saw in your bio, you could talk about the meaning of life according to the famous psychic, Edgar Cayce.
Edgar Cayce. Yeah. Sure. Edgar Cayce is a fascinating character. I don't know if you know about it, but if you're listeners, I'll just quickly tell you that he lived from 1877, I believe it was, till 1945. He was born in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. He grew up on a farm. And he was able to go into a trance, a self-induced trance, which he did every day for many years to answer questions that people put to him, mainly about health issues. what happened was that he had been a salesman in a bookstore, and he got laryngitis. And laryngitis, of course, you know, he couldn't talk, so he wasn't very good at sell books. And so he happened to, at that time, back in the, I guess, the 20s or the teens, they had vaudeville shows come through towns. And one came through the town he was in, and the hypnotist was part of that vaudeville show. And someone suggested that he ought to get the hypnotist to hypnotize him to see if he could cure the laryngitis. So the hypnotist did hypnotize Edgar Cayce. And while he was under hypnotism, he was able to speak normally. But when he came out of it, even with the post-hypnotic suggestion, he still had the laryngitis. So his doctor told him, why don't you try to hypnotize yourself and see if you can get over this thing. And so he did. And while he was under self-hypnosis, he was able to diagnose the problem and get over it. So the doctor said, gosh, that's great. You know, I've got patients who have problems that I can't seem to cure. Maybe you could help them. So that's how he got started going into this. He did it twice a day, every day for many years. There are over 14,000 a stenographer took shorthand of those sessions, and they're all available at the Association of Research and Enlightenment in Virginia Beach. You can search them now on using a computer, of course. But he gave people cures for medical problems that the doctors of that time, had them stumped. People started asking him questions that went well beyond health issues, like who's going to win the Kentucky Derby, and who's going to win the football game. And when that happened, he didn't remember what he said under hypnotism. The stenographer, of course, took it down. But when he realized what was going on, he stopped doing it for a while because it made him feel bad. So after that, he got his wife to be a kind of a gatekeeper. So anything that was asked had to come through her, so they wouldn't ask him things like that. But they did ask things like, why are we here? What's the meaning of life? And things like that. And during these times, some of these cures for his people that had phobias or issues, even medical issues, had to do with a past life, that they were hanging over from a past life. And that's the way to deal with them was to recognize where they came from, and then they could dispel the problem, the phobia. You know, maybe if you're afraid of snakes because you were bitten by a snake and died, or you were afraid of water because you had drowned in a previous life, things like that. Well, Edgar Cayce was a very strong Christian. And of course, as you know, reincarnation is not part of the Christian canon. It was deleted from the canon back in the 6th century, 553 BC, AD, at the Council of Constantine. The Emperor Justinian wanted it removed from Christian doctrine, and so it was. Well, anyway, that upset Edgar Cayce because he was a Christian, and he said, well, reincarnation, that doesn't jive with my beliefs and my church. Well, he stopped for a while, stopped doing those meditations for a while, and read the Bible through, which is something he did a lot. He actually read the Bible once through for every year he was alive, and saw that there were a lot of references in there to reincarnation, even though they didn't say the word reincarnation. Things like, Jesus asked his disciples, who do people think I am? And Jesus said, his disciples said, well, Some think you're John the Baptist, and others think you're Elijah or one of the prophets. Well, Elijah and the prophets lived 400 years before Jesus. So that's obviously a reference to him coming back from that previous life to be there. So anyway, long story short on what the meaning of life is, we, according to Edgar Cayce, incarnate one time after another, and the earth is a school, and we come here to learn and evolve. Evolution is really the meaning of life. We are evolving. We've evolved, and he doesn't say this, I say this, we've evolved from one cell animals in the sea to the top of the food chain where we are now. And we are continuing to evolve. And probably the best way to put it in a nutshell is if you've ever seen the movie Groundhog Day, where Bill Murray's character starts out as a real jerk who's, you know, just totally self-centered and unconscious, and goes through an infinite number of Groundhog Days where all the same problems present themselves, and each time he deals with them a little differently, until finally at the end of the movie he deals with them in a the right way, in a good way, in a compassionate way, and does everything works out. That's when he finally gets to move on to the next day, February 3rd. He even gets the girl. And so that is kind of what life is about. But the meaning of life is evolution. And we are here learning. You have to admit, life is full of problems. The Buddha said life is suffering, and there's no way around it. But those problems give us opportunities, like they did Bill Murray's character, to learn and to react, learn to react to them in the right way and to move on. So that's the meaning of life. That's why we're here. And we're evolving eventually, according to Cayce and many others, eventually we will return to the source when we evolve enough, and we may even become universes of our own.
Hi guys, this is Toby Passman, host of the Roscoe's Wetsuit Neuro Podcast. I hope you guys are enjoying the show today so far. If you're interested in learning to improve your cognition through the use of nutrition, supplementation, nootropics, exercise, and sleep, go ahead and check out roscoeswetsuitneuro.com and book a free 15-minute neuro health coaching consultation to see if neuro health coaching is for you. In neuro health coaching, we review your current cognitive status and work with you to improve your cognition through the use of the latest research-backed neuroscientific tips and tools. All right, now let's get back to the episode with Stephen Martin. What do you think, obviously it seems like some people kind of failed to evolve, you know, they face the same challenges on a repeated basis and continue confronting those in the same way, whereas other people, you know, are evolving and growing. Like, what do you think is what distinguishes those who are able to grow and evolve from those who aren't?
Well, you know, that's a great question too. Excellent question, because, you know, think about it. In the East, that would be called karma. You meet your karma. Until you overcome the karma, and that's something really that Edgar Cayce talked about too. People think of karma as you do something bad and something comes back to you that's bad, you know? And to an extent that's true, but that's a very shallow way of looking at it. What it is problems come to you because of your mindset and who you are. And you, if you want to overcome the problems, you've got to tackle them in a different way than you've been doing, or they'll keep coming back to you. Now, an example would be, let's take someone, man or a woman, who continues to attract someone to them who abuses them. they abuse them either physically or psychologically, and it happens over and over and over again. You know, you see this sort of thing happen. Well, what's that? Why does that person attract that kind of an individual to them? Why is that their karma? It's their karma because they must have a low opinion of themselves, and they must then be attracting people who hold the same low opinion that they have of themselves. And until they start realizing that they're a divine creature, who a human being who's, again, to use the same analogy, top of the food chain and a powerful spiritual being having a physical experience, until they realize that they're much more than they've been given themselves credit for, they're going to continue attracting someone like that to them. So that's how they overcome that karma and move on. Do you see what I mean?
I do. Stephen, moving on to, I wanted to ask you about your kind of beliefs about reincarnation and the afterlife in general. What's what is your take on that?
Well, I do think that reincarnation is a fact. There, you know, the University of Virginia has a division, I think they call it, called the Division of Perceptual Studies. And they have been studying children's memories of past lives since around the early 1960s, almost 60 years. Ian Stevenson was the man who started that. And they have over 2,500 cases of children who remember past lives. And they're continuing to do that today. The man who took over from Ian Stevenson is named Jim B. Tucker. He's also a psychiatrist, an MD, child psychiatrist. And I've interviewed him twice. And he's written several books. Stevenson wrote several books. But anyhow, there is a huge amount of evidence that these children, at least, really did were somebody else in a past life, that they recall their names and dates and places and things that happened and stuff like that, that is just too much for it to be coincidence or even, you know, any kind of trickery. Too many and too much information. So it looks like to me that it's a fact, and it makes sense and fits with what people like Edgar Cayce say, what the Rosicrucians believe. Again, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, those people realized that reincarnation was a real thing. In fact, it's on Benjamin Franklin's tombstone about how this old book is worn out, but he'll be back or something like that. I'd have to look it up to find out the real words. But it is. We incarnate over and over again, and we apparently pretty much pick our parents and our place where we're going to incarnate and the situation we're going to incarnate into in order to be exposed to particular lessons that we feel as we're looking on the other side that we need in order to evolve. Now, sometimes we don't live up to what we thought we were going to do before we got here, because there's this thing called the veil of forgetting, which is part of the system where most people do not remember past lives. I do have friends and know people who as adults remember past lives, but it's very rare. And even among children, it usually only occurs with those who, at least the vast majority of the children who remember past lives that the University of Virginia has studied, died some sort of unnatural death their life was cut short and they came back quickly. I think the average is within 15 months of the previous death, you know, and that 9 months had to be spent in their mother's womb. So yeah, they were murdered, they killed in the war, they were killed in an automobile accident, something that cut their life short. So they apparently want to get back quicker and finish whatever unfinished business they had. But most of us, according to the Rosicrucians, the average span between births is 140 years, Now that's average. It can be much longer. And obviously, according to University of Virginia, it can be a whole lot shorter. But the so if you live 70 years, you'd spend 70 years between lives before you incarnated again, on average. And that seems to make sense to me. But anyway, what the purpose of it is to learn, to evolve. And in between lives, I think we spend that learning. We usually have a group of people, group of souls that we're part of that are about the same level of evolvement or evolution as we are. And we often incarnate with those people. Not necessarily the same relationship each time. You know, your mother in this life could have been a daughter in another, and your son could have been your father in another, and that sort of thing. I used to have gone out to the School of Metaphysics in Missouri a couple of times and had past life regression things done, you know, and I've I know who some of my relatives and children and so forth were in previous lives. And it's interesting because, you know, we're all trying to help each other evolve, even though we don't realize it. Now that we do, though, maybe we could go a little faster. Does that answer your question?
It does, yes. Stephen, I wanted to next ask you about, so you've written quite a few books, several of which you've had best-selling books and won prizes for. And I just wanted to ask you, is there a specific book that stands out as your favorite that you've written?
Yeah, I think the one that has probably sold the most copies and has gotten the most interest and could be the most helpful to anyone who's interested in what we've just been talking about would be, there's one, it's called Life After Death, Powerful Evidence You Will Never Die. Life After Death, Powerful Evidence You Will Never Die. And that gives a lot of information about, not only quantum physics and how that suggests what we've been talking about, but also the research done by the University of Virginia and all that. And there, that same book is also part of a two-volume book that I have published called Afterlife, The Whole Truth. And that has Life After Death, Powerful Evidence You'll Never Die, plus a sequel, which is more of a, you know, what to do about it kind of book and how to speed up your evolution and, you know, what may happen between lives and so forth, more speculation. The first part is kind of facts based on research that's been done by a lot of different people. And the second part is my take on that, what you ought to do about it. So that's called Afterlife, The Whole Truth. So you can go to my website, which is shmartin.com, StephenHawleyMartin.com, shmartin.com. And up at the top on the menu, there's a tab that says books. You click on that and it'll show you all my books. And both of those books are on that page. You can just click on them. It'll take you to Amazon. You can read more about them. You can read it, you know, the first chapter or two, and decide if you want to purchase it.
And what's your process of going about finding research for your books? And also, what fields are you kind of gathering this research from?
Well, a lot of it comes from the interviews that I've done from podcasting, you know, hundreds of interviews, and a lot of anecdotal information that comes through in those, plus scientific information, people who've done studies, like, for example, Julie Bushell, who's been studying whether mediums can really communicate with the dead, which seems like apparently some of them can. Also, you know, I'm just finishing a book that it'll be out. I don't know when this podcast is going to run, but it's called A Witch in the Family. My seven times great grandmother, Susanna North Martin, was one of the Salem witches, or at least she was hanged as a witch. She wasn't, I don't think she was really a witch. There were some that were, I believe, practicing witchcraft, at least one who was hanged out of the 19. That entailed a lot of research into the historical record. It's amazing, but all the depositions, all the trial transcripts are available for the Salem witch trials. All of it is there. And then a lot of people who were eyewitnesses wrote accounts about it. So in that case, it's just a matter of doing a lot of research. And then I'm applying my understanding of metaphysics to that situation, because in the 19th and 20th centuries, people poo-pooed the idea that there could be anything really supernatural going on, anything paranormal going on, because they're scientific materialists. And the fact of the matter, and they, you know, they think that those little girls who were complaining about the people who tormenting them, the witches tormenting them, were making it all up. But I think there was a lot more that was going on than that. You know, there may have been some of that, but there was definitely some paranormal stuff going on at that, during that time. So that's what I've written about. That'll be out probably in the next couple of weeks. So I don't know when this will run, but maybe even now, if you're depending on when you run this.
And what's your process in terms of actually, like, when you're getting ready to write a book or in the process of writing a book, does this stuff kind of all fit together naturally somehow in your head, or like how?
You're
just synthesizing so much different complicated information into, you know, into a coherent book.
Good question. I am an INTJ. I don't know if you're familiar with the Myers-Briggs personality indicator, but I'm an INTJ, and that's what INTJs do. I mean, they take a whole lot of information and see how it all fits together to create kind of a model of what things are in whatever situation they're analyzing, you know, how it all works together. And so it's just part of my personality to take a lot of what a lot of people would think was disparate kind of information and put it together so that at least it makes sense to me. And I think it, you know, it usually makes sense to my readers by the time I'm finished with it.
Do you have a favorite person that you've had on your podcast, a favorite guest?
Yeah, there. The guy that jumps to mind is a guy named Taliesin St. Clair, and I had him on, I don't know, probably half a dozen times. And he's just got so many interesting stories of things that have happened to him. He's a real believer in all this stuff, but he remembers past lives. He has paranormal kind of things happen to him all the time. It's just, it makes him a great guest because he's very entertaining. And then the other one would probably be Jim B. Tucker, whom I mentioned before, who's a child psychiatrist at the University of Virginia, and he's now the head of the Division of Perceptual Studies, which is studying not only what children remember, past lives of children, but they're also studying near-death experiences. They're studying memories of well, apparently one phenomenon that they're studying is that often people who are Alzheimer's patients or have been in a coma for a while before they die will become very lucid right before they pass. And their theory is that what happens is the brain is a receiver of information. It's like a cell phone picking up, you know, your mind, which is not really physical. And what happens as the brain dies, it lets loose of its grasp. And so that in the last day or hours before death, often these people become lucid. And this happened to my grandmother when she died, where she had dementia and had been in a coma. And hours before she died, she came out of it and she talked to people and she you know, said her goodbyes, and she went, you know, and that jives with what they're saying. So anyway, Jim B. Tucker is now the head of that division and makes a fascinating interview. You might want to get him on your podcast.
Is that that sort of experience of the lucidity right before death, does he talk about it at all being related to DMT? Because that's one of the molecules that I've heard is released both when we are born.
You know, I haven't heard him talk about that. The one I heard talk about and give some actual examples of that is a fellow, and you could also interview him. I have not interviewed him, but he probably would be happy to be on your show because he's got a book out now. I can't think of the name of it, but his name is Bruce Grayson. And he was the former head of that department before Tucker took over, but he's still very active. I've seen YouTube videos of him being interviewed, but I saw one that he did a while ago where he gave a case history of someone who had been in a coma and came out of it. Really kind of an interesting case history. And I'm sure he has others. So, yeah. Jim, his name is Bruce Grayson, G-R-E-Y-S-O-N.
Well, Stephen, we're approaching the end of the show, but is there anything that we haven't covered yet related to anything metaphysical, consciousness, reincarnation, death, anything that you think is really important for the listeners to hear before we go?
Well, I think one of the things that is really important and a really good reason to read the books I've mentioned, and again, my website is shmartin.com, is that I have lost any fear of death. And I think that once you know all the facts and you realize what the true nature of reality is, you will lose any fear of death. And that is such a liberating feeling to have, to not worry about it. And I think you'll probably live a lot longer because you no longer fear death, which, you know, I think what happens is we often attract to ourselves whatever it is we fear. So to me, that is the whole benefit of what I've done in all these years, is to lose the fear of death, to realize that life is a continuum, that we may change form, but we continue on forever. It's eternal. We are eternal spiritual beings having a physical experience right now. And we're going to be with ourselves for a long, long time. So you might as well get to like yourself and be the person you want to be, because there's no getting around it. You're going to be with yourself for eternity.
Got it. Well, Stephen, if people want to find out more about your work or get any of your books, where would you direct them to?
I would just tell them to come to my website, shmartin.com. And there's a little video of me on there talking about my philosophy. And also, like I said, up at the menu, you click on books and it'll take you to my, you'll see all the covers. Just click on a cover. It'll take you to the page on Amazon. You can read about the book. You can read a couple of chapters of it, decide if you want it or not. Maybe check another one out. So yeah, I'd suggest that's the way to go. And also, if you want to get in touch with me, there's a contact form on that website, and you fill that out and I'll get back to you. I get, I get people writing to me that way all the time, and I answer them all.
Great. Well, yeah, definitely advise people to go check that out. And for those of you who enjoyed the show today, go ahead and like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's Roscoe's Wetsuit Neuro. And also go ahead and subscribe on whatever audio platform that you listen to the show on, whether that be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of the other ones. We are on them all. Also, you can go ahead and get in touch with the podcast on Twitter at Wetsuit Podcast and on Instagram at Roscoe's Wetsuit Neuro. So please feel free to reach out, leave any comments, questions, requests for any interviews that you guys would like to see. And yeah, so again, Stephen, I wanted to really thank you for coming on the show today. It was a real pleasure having you on.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed it very much. I appreciate you having me.